"Weston, you pass me these," he said, walking round the flat and collecting up as many throws and blankets as he could find before clambering up the ladder, feeling the nip in the air as he stepped out onto the flat roof. Arranging the blankets on the ground, he turned to see Clara appearing through the hole, thrusting a bottle of wine in his direction before straightening up. She produced some tea lights from the pockets of her cardigan and proceeded to light them.
"You're like a Boy Scout," he said, laughing as she looked at him in confusion.
They sat side by side, blankets around their shoulders as they stared up at the night sky. Aside from a wisp of cloud, the midnight blue expanse was filled with stars, clusters spattered all around them. The high street was silent. A few squares of window lit up from the inside. A few chimney pots smoking, leaving the lingering smell of wood smoke in the air. The flames around them flickered, marking their own spot away from everything else.
"Perfect," Clara breathed.
Joe felt the same, finding it hard to remember what he'd normally be doing at this time, not caring that he'd left his mobile in the flat below, suddenly not caring if he never saw it again. He swigged from the wine bottle.
"I feel like I'm 14 again. I used to sneak up here with friends to drink and smoke. We thought we were so subtle until Mum left us ashtrays up here and we realized she'd known all along."
"Your mum is brilliant," Clara smiled, feeling a familiar stab of pain but pushing it away, not wanting to ruin things. Joe nodded.
"She is," he said, picturing her now somewhere in Europe.
For the first time since she'd left, he felt a desperate urge to see her, to give her a hug, tell her to have an amazing trip. Why hadn't he done those things? Why did he have to hold everything in all the time?
"My mum was brilliant too," Clara said, her voice whisper quiet. "I should have told her more."
She bit her lip and looked up at the sky again. Joe stared down at his hands, imagining how he would feel.
"She would have known," he said, placing his hand over hers.
Clara stared at it for the longest time. He felt the whole evening freeze as they sat there. Electricity shooting up through his arm, aware of her body inches from his. When he turned to say something to her, she was already looking at him, with an expression that made him cup her face in his hands, draw her slowly towards him. Everything else faded away as they kissed. There was no nip in the air, no sounds from the high street, no wind at all. Just them, their lips together, her breath on his face.
"Darlings!" came a voice, a loud voice, a familiar voice.
Joe squeezed his eyes tight. The kiss faltered.
"Cooey!"
He pulled away. He was imagining it. They'd been talking about her. He'd conjured her. This was definitely not the time. He begged his mum to get out of his head. Clara's lips, her pale pink lipstick kissed away, were achingly close. Her expression matched his own confusion, and she drew back as they both looked towards the trapdoor. Louisa's face appeared at the top of the ladder.
"Surprise!"
she called, bustling out onto the rooftop.
"Oh,"
she said, taking in the blankets, the candles.
"Have I interrupted something?"
Chapter 30. Louisa hadn't given either of them time to react. Caught on the rooftop, snogging the face off her landlady's son, Clara thought she might die of embarrassment. She peered over the edge to see if she could make a leap for it. They were high up, but perhaps a broken leg might be worth it if it removed her from this awkwardness. Joe had dived backwards as if she'd rubbed arsenic on her lips and was running a hand through his hair as they both watched his mother emerge onto the roof, holding her arms out wide and staring up at the stars.
"How magical! This is just gorgeous!"
Her mouth was moving soundlessly. The whole scene seemed utterly surreal, as if the last few minutes hadn't happened, the kiss erased by the shock of the arrival.
Clara, you are clever.
It was Joe, Clara whispered.
Louisa barely seemed to notice, hustling them over to the blanket surrounded by tea lights and making herself at home.
Amazing. Come and sit here. And you, darling?
She waved at Joe, who was still doing an impression of a guppy.
Clara, you've made it look so wonderful, my dear. I feel like the whole flat should feature in some winter chalet brochure. It's so Nordic chic.
Clara's Danish, Joe said in a low voice as he sat down on the other side of Louisa.
Clara couldn't bear to look at him.
Gavin had told me, of course, but I had no idea. And you found all those lovely rugs and blankets, and I adore the candles in the glasses. I felt so relaxed when I let myself in, almost dissolved into a pool. The flight was horrendous, and God, it's cold, but I just forgot everything and wanted to curl up on the sofa and snuggle down. You are clever. So, tell me everything. Apparently you've been working miracles.
Louisa barely paused for breath, and Clara couldn't focus on her answers. Discussing the displays, the workshop was a blur. All she was aware of was Joe, who had fallen completely silent. Unable to answer any more questions, she stood up suddenly, glad that it was too dark to see Joe's expression as she stumbled backwards.
"I'm just going to pack up now, Louisa. I'm in your room, so I'll head to the pub."
Louisa was about to protest, but she got distracted almost immediately.
"Look, Joe, do look. The plough is so bright tonight. Do you remember me pointing out Orion's belt when you were small and we used to come up here? It's so wonderful to see you here, and you look gorgeous. I love the jumper. Cashmere just makes me want to cling on to you and never let go. I won't, of course. You'd hate that."
Joe was almost mute. Just one-word replies. Clara gripped the ladder as she descended.
"Wait,"
Joe's voice.
"Mum, shall we..."
"Clara,"
he called.
"Wait."
Clara didn't give them time to stop her, but raced around the bedroom, scooping up her belongings, stripping the bed and dragging her rucksack out the door.
"It's fine, honestly," she rattled on. "You have so much to catch up on, and I'm happy to stay in the pub. You know, Gavin always says I'm welcome..."
"Oh, Gavin,"
Louisa said, practically falling off the last rung of the ladder, clinging to Joe to right herself.
"He is so marvellous. Will you give him the most enormous hug from me and tell him I'll be over there tomorrow? I can't wait to see him."
Clara nodded, pulling the cord on her rucksack, her coat dragging behind her, one arm in, the other out as she moved across the kitchen. Joe had stayed frozen to the floor next to the rooftop ladder, watching her leave.
"So, I'll be at the pub,"
Clara called in her heartiest voice. Lady Carcar chose that moment to reel off every movie line in her repertoire.
"Hasta la vista, baby! Show me the money! Hakuna Matata, shitheads!"
Ignoring the parrot, Louisa dragged Joe over to the sofa, firing questions at him non-stop. Clara stood for a moment in the doorway, Joe looking across at her, before turning and heading down the stairs, feeling a stone in her stomach, a heavy weight that settled as she listened to their voices fading, as she opened the door out to the high street, as she closed it behind her. By the time she got to the pub, she was aching and tired. She stared up at the familiar exterior, thinking back to her first night, looking at the difference now. The thick red velvet curtains that hung in the windows, the sprigs of holly, the wreath on the door, ribbons amongst the greenery. The flickering warmth from the roaring fire that hit her the moment she pushed her way through the door. It was as if she was reliving that night all those weeks ago, standing there puffing, holding a heavy rucksack. Clive's bald spot at the same table to her left, bent over a pint once more. Even Roz was on the same stool at the bar, dark nails tapping her glass, lips stained red as she turned to stare. Clara approached the bar, relieved to see Gavin looking at her with a question on his lips.
"Can I stay?"
she asked immediately, ready to throw her rucksack to the ground and tell him everything. Gavin's eyes widened.
"Here? But what about the flat?"
Have you and Joe fallen out?
No, I... She couldn't face explaining. Where to begin, anyway? She suddenly felt impossibly sad that her night had ended up here, that her adventure was over exactly where it had first begun. She felt herself sag. Can I take the room? Gavin bit his lip, his eyes rolling in panic.
Oh, someone else is staying.
Clara paused, her muscles protesting as she hoiked the rucksack up onto her shoulder. And there's no other room? Gavin paused for only a second, eyes flicking up and right.
No, sorry,
he mumbled. He couldn't meet her gaze.
Clara felt a burst of anger. After all she'd done for him, for the pub.
She pictured the closed door upstairs, not believing him. She turned to go, ignoring his calls, Roz's questions about Joe, the shop, the flat, pushing out of the pub and marching back down the high street. As she neared the shop, she studiously avoided staring too hard. She couldn't ignore it, though. A quick glance back over her shoulder as she passed, the window still ablaze, picturing Joe with his mum chatting warmly on the sofa, Louisa opening the shop up tomorrow without her. She felt the prickle of tears in her eyes, quietly admonishing herself for ever imagining things wouldn't have ended like this. She didn't belong here. She had been passing through. Louisa was back now, and she would move on. She was outside Lauren's cottage after only a few minutes, darkened windows on the first floor, a hopeful trail of smoke from the chimney, a glow behind the curtains of the front room. She knocked tentatively, rolling her shoulders, preparing herself to launch into an explanation, hoping Patrick wouldn't answer. She barely knew him. One fondue didn't warrant an overnight stay. No response. She knocked lightly one more time. Hello? Lauren sounded uncertain on the other side of the door.
It's me,
Clara whispered through the wood.
Santa?
Clara?
She said a little louder. There was the sound of a lock being turned, one eye appearing in an inch-wide crack as the door was opened.
Oh,
Lauren said, seeing Clara. What are you doing here? She was holding a pot of nail varnish, one hand painted red, the other still bare.
Can I stay?
Clara asked, standing on the doormat, fingers freezing, hair whipped to the side.
Of course, of course. But what's happened? Are you all right? Come in, come in.
Lauren ushered her into the corridor, eyeing the enormous rucksack but not making any comment.
Patrick's out and I'm halfway through a movie. The dog has just died, so it looks like you're in the perfect mood to join me.
She rushed about, going through to the kitchen for another glass, plumping cushions, sweeping aside magazines so that Clara could sink into the sofa, pouring wine without asking. Clara sat back, head resting on the cushions. Lauren returned to painting her nails, giving Clara a chance to sip her drink. The moment she set her glass down, Lauren looked at her, a worried frown on her face.
What's happened? You okay?
Her expression was full of concern, and Clara felt guilty for worrying her.
It's not life-threatening, it's just...
She paused, twirling the glass in her hand.
Should she tell Lauren about the kiss?
About how she thought things had changed between her and Joe?
Last time she'd been here, she'd been swearing about him.
That seemed a lifetime ago.
What? Lauren prompted, topping up her glass.
Clara took a breath. Louisa came back tonight. Lauren looked as though she was about to launch into a speech, mouth open. She snapped it shut.
But that's not too bad, is it?
I've left, Clara said, as if to clarify.
Oh, I see. Did she kick you out? She wouldn't do that, would she? Has she seen the latest article Sam wrote? Is she jealous?
Clara frowned.
What article?
Lauren shifted on the sofa.
Oh, it's nothing, really. Just very gushing.
He called you a rare Danish gem.
She raised an eyebrow.
Sam?
Clara couldn't concentrate, was too busy running over the night's events on repeat. What had Sam got to do with anything?
I was worried, actually, that you might be falling for Mr. Octopussy's charms.
We've all been there, Lauren sighed.
Octopussy?
Now Clara was utterly confused. Lauren leaned over towards her.
That's what we call him, because he has so many hands trying to get to your...
Clara held up her own hands in surrender.
Whoa, I understand.
Lauren snorted a laugh.
Don't say I didn't warn you.
His poor wife, she added as an afterthought. Clara's mouth formed an O.
He's married?
She thought back to their conversations, how she'd always seen him on his own or with his daughter.
Oh, yes, very married. She commutes and has carried on working full-time.
Didn't he mention her? Clara shook her head.
Wow, I had no idea.
Lauren shook her head.
Pretty standard from Octopussy.
Did he offer to take your photograph, by the way?
Did he tell you you had great skin?
Which you totally do. But did he? Clara felt her toes curl at Lauren's questions. She nodded slowly.
Yes, he told me I'd make the perfect subject.
Lauren grimaced.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry.
I should have warned you about him. He's tried it on with half the mothers in the village. He told my friend Cressida that she had skin like a freshly opened oyster.
Which doesn't even make sense, and she almost left her husband there and then.
So don't be down about it.
Clara shook her head. No, it's not Sam. Nothing to do with him.
She took another sip of wine.
It's just...
Well, now that Louisa's back, I needed to leave. She decided she wasn't ready yet to tell Lauren about Joe.
Okay,
Lauren said slowly. But if she suspected there was more going on, she didn't say.
She has lots to catch up on with Joe.
Of course, Lauren said, stroking on more nail polish, the pungent smell making Clara's head swim in the small living room.
So she'll run the shop again and I'll...
Clara trailed away, feeling her mouth turn down, the hopeless feeling from earlier wash over her.
I'll move on again.
Lauren looked up, cocking her head to one side. Is that what you want? She asked. All jokiness evaporated. Clara paused, bit her bottom lip. She nodded slowly.
I've been here long enough. I wasn't planning to stay anywhere too long.
Lauren reached across with one hand.
And why is that? She probed.
Clara felt tears build at the back of her eyes. She found she couldn't speak.
Why are you always on the move, Clara?
Lauren wouldn't release her from her stare, and Clara felt the whole room suck in a breath as if waiting on her next words.
I'm always looking for somewhere that feels like home.
She whispered, feeling the tears spilling over, marking a trail down one cheek.
Like Denmark?
Lauren's nose screwed up in a question, and Clara let out a hiccup of a giggle, wiping at her face.
Somewhere I'm loved, she said, realizing the simplicity of what she wanted and how hard it was to achieve. I love Denmark, but my dad has his own family now. Until last year it was me and Mum, and now she's gone. It's not the same.
Lauren looked at her. I'm sorry, Clara. I didn't know.
She was ill for a while. I was always working. Then I missed...
She couldn't finish the sentence, crumpling under the words, the tears coming faster now, the room blurring as she thought back to the last time she'd seen her. The visit cut short so she could get back to London for a client meeting. She couldn't remember if she'd kissed her goodbye. Her mum never asking her for anything. Always proud of her busy daughter, showing photos of her to friends, telling them about the awards Clara had won. Then the decline. So quick, and Clara sitting upright in a plastic bucket seat at London City Airport, waiting for the first flight home, watching dawn leak over the horizon, knowing that every second was precious. Arriving home to her mum's friend Freya reaching for her, face tear-stained, her mum prostrate in bed upstairs. Too late to say goodbye. Lauren had scooted to sit next to her on the sofa, pulling Clara's head onto her shoulder.
Oh, poor you.
She knew, though, didn't she, Clara? She knew you loved her. Clara nodded, unable to speak, her top damp from her tears. Joe had said the same. They were both right.
She knew, she agreed, a small light inside her, glad she was here.
They sat for a while in the living room, not speaking, and Clara felt something lift in her as she got up to go to bed. She hadn't realized she had needed to talk about it. She followed Lauren up the stairs, smiling weakly at the sight of the room she'd be sleeping in, the camping mattress rolled out onto a playmat covered in large letters of the alphabet, a Peppa Pig duvet that would barely cover her.
"It's not exactly luxury, but I hope it's okay," Lauren said, resting a hand on her arm.
"And you can stay as long as you like," she said in a low voice.
"Thanks," Clara said, a lump in her throat again.
She reached across and hugged Lauren.
"You're a good friend."
"Oh, you toss," Lauren smiled, nudging her. She paused at the doorway, silhouetted in the light from the hall. "You'll find it again." Clara nodded at her from the bed, knowing what she had meant, and as she pulled the duvet up to her chin, she wondered for a second whether she had found it, and whether she had let it go. Chapter 31. Clara was on her second beer of the day, and it wasn't even midday. Outside, the pavement was dusted with a thin layer of snow, and she couldn't help thinking of home.
What was she doing here in Suffolk?
She didn't belong here. And yet, the last few weeks had sparked something in her. She felt she belonged somewhere again, that the village had needed her. She had needed the village. She thought of the displays, the children she wouldn't see any more, the giggling in the workshop as they painted and created, the chaos and mess, the delighted faces when they turned to show their parents what they'd produced, the small crowds collected on the pavements when she turned the countdown to zero. Lauren had woken her earlier with a cup of tea and a Kit Kat Chunky before flying out of the door with Rory to nursery. Clara hadn't wanted to stay in the house alone, but realized she had nowhere else to go. Gavin had been polishing the same glass forever, his eyes flicking over to her. He had apologized repeatedly when he'd appeared on Lauren's doorstep that morning, dragging her along the pavement to the pub, plying her with free drinks to make up for kicking her out the night before.
"I was so worried. I should never have let you leave like that. I checked everywhere. The bush shelter, the garden shed. Joe and Louisa joined me. We even searched the woods. She was wonderful."
He tailed off then, looking all misty-eyed. Clara found herself distracted from asking more about Joe.
"Are you and Louisa..."
Gavin nodded slowly.
"I think we're... an item," he said, doing the quotation marks. "We stayed up all night."
Clara raised an eyebrow.
"Talking?"
Gavin had practically shouted it as they reached the door of the pub. Clara couldn't help the giggle that escaped.
"And look," he'd
said as they'd bustled inside, pointing to the window. He had upholstered the window seat, lining it with cushions, bookshelves set into the wall, the perfect spot to curl up in and read.
"It's lovely," Clara said grudgingly, because it really was, and she found herself wandering over there, running a finger along the spines of the books.
Perhaps losing herself to reading and beer was the only way to go. She'd been there ever since. Louisa appeared in the doorway, and Clara heard a startled yelp and then a smash as Gavin dropped the glass he'd been cleaning.
"Gavin!"
She bounded into the room, her skin deep brown, her eyes twinkling, snow clinging to her red coat.
Mulled cider? What a wonderful idea. Yes, please, she said.
It was Clara's idea. Proving popular, Gavin called from where he was crouching on the floor behind the bar, sweeping glass into a dustpan.
Clara?
Louisa spun round to where she was sitting, shoulders sagging.
Clara felt dreary next to Louisa's bright coat, straightening up and trying not to hiccup from the early drinking.
You found her! Oh, Gavin, well done! You are wonderful!
A red stain crept into Gavin's cheeks as he handed her a drink. Louisa skirted round the bar to press her lips on his, and Clara looked away.
Clara, Louisa said, moving away from Gavin, who now had cherry red smears all round his mouth. I'm so, so sorry for the desperately rude way I burst in last night. I should never have let you go, but it was so darling to see Joe. I never see him, and he looked so relaxed and happy, I just couldn't resist. And then when Gavin appeared and told us he'd turned you away and I realized you'd actually gone, upped and poof, left, we looked for you. Joe was terribly up. Gavin, darling!
She started to laugh as he moved across to join them.
You've got lipstick all over your face. So, as I was saying,
she turned back to Clara, clearly having lost her thread.
It's just heavenly to see you back here now.
She took a sip of her mulled cider.
I think Lady Carcar is in mourning, too. She has been quite out of sorts all morning. Usually I put on top gear and she cheers right up, but not even Maverick could make the old thing perky. And she's shedding feathers. It's desperately sad. You must visit her.
It's been less than 12 hours. Clara felt her mouth lift.
She's a very sensitive bird, Louisa said.
Gavin had moved across to the bookshelves and was taking down board games, ready for the customers that afternoon. Many had taken to playing the games by the big fireplace.
Oh, did you hear? Gavin said, his head emerging from behind an armchair. Bertie's is opening up again. A restaurant back in the village. Isn't it great?
Louisa clapped her hands. How wonderful. I always adored his dessert trolley, she said, a dreamy expression on her face. He would never tell me how he made his meringues so light. Mine are always flat as a pancake, and so chewy.
Clara felt her heart lift at the news, then fall as she realized she wouldn't be around to see it opening. She couldn't stay on now. There was nothing for her here. She thought quickly of Joe, whether he was still in the flat, allowed herself a flicker of hope.
So, will you be moving on now? Louisa asked, as if reading her mind. We must give you a proper send-off, if so. Something spectacular, don't you think, Gavin?
Gavin was sitting with both legs stuck out in front of him, surrounded by board games. He nodded to the carpet. Then, after a pause, he looked up.
Actually, he coughed, getting slowly to his feet, I think I'd better show you both something.
Clara looked at Louisa and frowned. Gavin looked impossibly shifty, as if he was about to tell them a terrible secret. Louisa clearly felt the same, laughing as she teased him.
Very mysterious.
Gavin fiddled nervously with the cuff of his jumper.
It's, upstairs.
Louisa raised an eyebrow. What's upstairs?
The...
Gavin stuttered to a stop.
Oh, just come on. I need to show you.
Clara had shot off the window seat, heart thumping as she realized she might finally find out what was behind the closed door upstairs. That had to be it. She hadn't dared ask him. He'd always seemed so impossibly jumpy about it. She'd imagined a mad wife in a torn nightie, a room of skeletons, a secret sex dungeon. None of the options had quite fitted with what she knew of gentle Gavin. All her other worries disappeared as she trotted dutifully up the stairs behind him.
I'm getting a bit nervous, Gavin, Louisa called up as she followed Clara. You're not going to ask us to start calling you Gale, are you?
Gavin was completely silent as he stood outside the door in the corridor. Unlocking it, he lifted the latch, took a deep breath, and stepped back, gesturing silently that they should go inside. Clara wavered in the corridor, not sure she really wanted to know any more. A man was entitled to his secrets, and poor Gavin seemed so nervous, pulling at his jumper and looking anywhere but at them.
"Go on," he said gruffly. "I should have done this ages ago."
"Turning you away last night, Clara. It was unforgivable."
Clara curled her clammy hands together before tentatively pushing on the wooden door and stepping inside, Louisa so close behind she could feel her breath on her neck.
"Oh, my," said Louisa.
Clara nodded mutely.
So this was the big secret.
There was so much to say, but she found that all she could do was laugh in relief. The room was jam-packed with hundreds of different-sized teddy bears. Teddy bears with clothes on, teddy bears missing eyes, teddy bears in browns, blacks, greys. Gavin must have been collecting them for years. Somewhere underneath them was a bed. Patches of carpet bare in between teddies on rugs, teddies in different poses. Gavin appeared, ashen-faced, behind them.
"Surprise," he said, looking so weak he might fall down.
Louisa looked at him for a long moment, then held out her arms and grinned.
"You great, big, gorgeous softy," she said, and launched herself at him.
They were still laughing about it half an hour later when Louisa checked her watch and stood up, spilling mulled cider all down her top.
"Darn, I'm late," she said, grabbing the back of Clara's chair to right herself.
"Wow, that stuff is potent," she said, staring at her glass as if it contained diamonds.
"Where are you off to?" Clara asked, nudging Gavin. "Your move."
Gavin stared at his tiles once more.
"A good game is a fast game, etc.," she chided for the millionth time.
She felt this game of Scrabble might go on forever. Louisa had the right idea.
"I'm off to see Roz," Louisa said, rolling her eyes. "Dreadful woman."
"Louisa,"
Gavin said in a warning voice, looking up.
"It's a good offer."
I know," Louisa said.
Clara found herself freezing, her tiles forgotten. Before she could ask about what Roz was offering and for what, she was distracted by Louisa's next sentence.
"And Joe said he'd handle it all for me, with the agent."
"Joe?" Clara repeated, blushing deeply as she realized she'd just blurted his name out loud. She coughed, attempting to conceal her interest.
"Where is he?"
"Joe?"
Louisa was shrugging on her coat and getting one arm caught in it.
"Oh, he's back in the flat. I don't think he slept. After our search for you, he got a call from a colleague and disappeared into his room on his phone, tapping on his laptop. Typical Joe," she smiled. "He'll probably already have left for London. That boy doesn't stay anywhere for more than a second. It was heavenly to see him last night, but I assume it will be back to the grindstone for him. I must text him and tell him we found you."
"London?"
Clara repeated, the thought causing her to panic. She stood up abruptly. She couldn't just let him go back to London without seeing him. Did he even know she was still here? She cursed herself for staying in the pub for so long.
"All okay?"
Gavin said, raising an eyebrow, watching her fumble with her coat.
"Need to go," Clara mumbled, doing up the buttons all wrong. "Must see, remembered something,"
she said, not meeting his eye.
"But your tiles," Louisa cried. "I know you've got the X," she added.
"Have it,"
Clara called as she headed for the door.
"Oh, goody,"
Louisa dived on her tray. Clara hurtled down the high street, her heart lifting on seeing the burgundy paint of the shop front. She fumbled with her keys, letting herself in and bounding up the stairs to the flat before pausing to take a breath, smooth her hair, readjust her top. This was it. She turned the key in the lock and stepped inside.
"Joe,"
she called out, not wanting to surprise him in the middle of a mud bath or a conference call.
"Joe,"
she said for the second time, already feeling the weight of the silence around her. Then a rustle of feathers alerted her to the sole occupant of the room. Lady Carcar, peering at her from her position on high.
"Houston, we have a problem," she called.
The flat was empty. Washing up done, wine glasses drying upside down on a tea towel. The counters had been wiped down, and Clara moved across to read from a single sheet of paper left on the side. Mum. Have left for London. Will call later. Love you. J. Kiss. She sat down heavily on a bar stool, picking up the note and reading the words over and over again. He had already gone back to London, without even waiting to say goodbye to his own mother. Or to her, a little voice added in her head. She felt her whole body wilt. All the things she wanted to say draining out of her. All the excitement she'd felt on the way over, leaking away. He had gone. Back to the city. Back to his job. Maybe she'd been wrong about the change in him. Maybe he was the same as he'd ever been. Then something on the table caught her eye. A newspaper, open on a large photo of Clara herself, grinning behind the counter of the shop, children scattered around her, the place looking colourful and alive with joy, noise and people. She peered at it, tracing the outline of her own face. She looked impossibly happy. Her smile, her face, totally content. She really had loved her time in the shop, seeing the children's expressions when she changed the display, chatting with the local parents. With a sting, she realized that was all over. She would be moving on too. There was nothing keeping her here. Suddenly, she noticed the headline of the piece, Save Our Shop, and a growing sense of unease filled her as she began to read Sam's new article. It was a call to arms, to stop the shop from being sold, a lot of quotes from locals bemoaning the closure of yet another high street shop, the rise of online shopping, the damage it was doing to communities. To think some toffee-nosed Londoner can come up here and sell it off. It's part of the village, the beating heart, an anonymous source was quoted as saying. It's not my shop, Clara Christensen said, standing wide-eyed in front of the doomed store. The Danish woman who has breathed life back into this toy shop, created a magical place for children in the village, looks heartbroken at the thought of it closing its doors for the last time. Oh, no, Clara whispered, hand to her mouth as she read to the end. It was damning, and she pictured Jo reading it, seeing her picture, knowing she'd spoken about the shop to a journalist. She got up slowly, not wanting to believe he had really left, that she couldn't fix this. As she moved across to his bedroom, she saw that his leather holdall had gone. He had left, and she had missed him, and she wasn't sure when or if he'd be back. She leaned against the doorframe and stared ahead, at a loss as to what to do next, just wanting to rewind time. Chapter 32. Everything was back to normal. Jo stepped out onto the pavement, turning to tip the driver, who looked startled but pleased. Pigeons scattered in his wake as he moved towards the revolving doors. He craned his neck, looking up at the blank glass windows, sunlight bouncing off them, unable to make out which was his amongst the uniform rows. Someone swore on a mobile behind him. A cyclist swerved around him, trousers tucked into socks. Jo tried to summon the energy required to take the last few steps towards the building. He thought back to the previous night, the scene on the rooftop happening in another lifetime now. Clara's face in the candlelight, her hand resting on the blanket. He'd stared at her fingers for the longest time, plucking up the courage to reach across the space and kiss her. Then his mother's shock appearance and the way he'd just frozen, knowing already that everything was about to change. Clara's face as she'd dragged her backpack across the kitchen, his feet planted as he'd watched her leave. He pushed through the revolving doors, nodding to the porter and heading towards the lift. He tapped in the floor number and held open the door for someone racing to catch it.
Thanks,
the man huffed, tire askew, bags under his eyes.
No problem,
Jo smiled, unable to rush today, unable to focus, still lost somewhere in Suffolk. He wondered where she'd gone,
They'd searched for a while.
Why didn't she have a mobile?
His mum had texted to tell him she was still there, but he'd already left. The lift had reached his floor, the doors opened, and then he was striding across the familiar reception area, holding up his ID to be scanned as he pushed open the door. The sound of raised voices, shouts, keyboards tapping, phones ringing, a photocopier whirring, hit him like a wall. And he almost turned on his heel and went straight back the way he'd come. No one looked up as he walked across the space to his desk. Everyone too focused on their jobs, shouting down the phone, slamming the receiver down, swearing into space. The energy, the excitement, had been what had first attracted him to the job. No more sleepy Suffolk, no more evenings with just his mum. Here he could be the man he wanted to be, the man his father was, making deals, handling millions of pounds. Important. Now the thought of the day ahead, a day that probably wouldn't end before the early hours, exhausted him. His overflowing in-tray, the emails he hadn't responded to, the taut faces of his team, eager like greyhounds in the starting blocks, wanting to share their updates first. He let them rattle on, sipping at his coffee, not switching on his computer, half listening to their words, praising their efforts but looking over their shoulders to the windows behind them. The clear blue sky. A perfect winter day. He wondered if Clara was walking, Wellington's on, cheeks pink, through the woods behind the village. Then he thought of the newspaper article, what she'd said to that journalist. Is that how she'd really felt? He had needed to get out of there. Clearly, he didn't fit in. It had all been a strange, momentary pipe dream of an alternative life. It was over now. His mum was back, and he was in London.
And Pam is leaving in the new year, of course, so we've lined up interviews for your new PA.
Joe came too.
Leaving? Pam's going.
Mercer looked at him as if he was stupid.
She's retiring. After 45 years.
Pam herself appeared at that moment, carrying files, her hair pinned back, skirting an errant office chair. Joe jumped up, face flooding with shame as he removed the files from her arms.
Pam, I had no idea. Retirement?
Her eyes widened before she collected herself. Oh, that's quite all right. I put it in your calendar, but you're a busy man. Joe felt terrible. He'd always taken Pam for granted. Her stable presence, her no-nonsense approach, her ability to screen calls, make clients feel welcome, never a day off sick or a favour asked. Why hadn't he valued her more?
You're amazing. How will we ever replace you?
He said, watching her face flood red at his words.
Don't be silly,
she huffed, pulling on the cuff of her shirt. We'll find someone more than capable.
Well, it won't be the same,
Pam said, scooping up a dirty mug nearby. The moment I take one of these away, another one appears, she added, clearly keen for the focus to be shifted away from her. Joe made a mental note to think of something they could get her, something that would really show her work had been valued, noticed. Then his cheeks coloured again as he realised he didn't know the first thing about her. Had only ever spoken to her about work, deadlines, clients. He'd allowed her to bat his questions away so that he had stopped asking, and only ever treated her in their stiff, professional way. He regretted that now. He hoped she was going to do something fabulous in her retirement. Andrew has been asking to see you when you're in, Joseph, she said on her way past. He's asked twice, in fact. That was one more time than he liked to ask, and Joe found himself hurrying over to the lift. He straightened his tie on the way up, already starting to forget the other things on his mind, running through the latest deal, ready to dazzle, to smooth talk. He cleared his throat, tapping his foot impatiently. With every floor he passed, Suffolk seemed further and further away. He stepped into the polished foyer, a marble fountain in front of him, a glossy desk opposite, manned by a woman wearing a telephone headset. She had bright red lips and smooth, dark hair. A few weeks ago, he might have asked for her number. Now he simply asked to be buzzed into the room. They left him waiting a while, twitching on the sofa, idly flicking through the FT,
unable to concentrate on the articles. Shares going up, companies going bust, money being made, same old, same old. He felt a sharp shock at that thought, returning to tapping his foot, realizing he'd left his phone downstairs. After an age, the smooth-haired woman beckoned him through. Andy was there, seated behind his enormous glass desk. Karen perched on the edge of it, as if Joe had just interrupted them chatting casually. He knew them better than that. Knew she had wanted to be here. That the casual stance was a carefully thought-out pose. Andy looked up and acknowledged him. Karen stood to shake his hand, bracelets jangling, the lines on her face reduced by recent surgery. Joe found himself staring at her hand, the liver spots and slight creasing of the skin the only hints to her age.
"So, fire away,"
said Andy, a man who could only talk in clichés and figures.
"Tell us about this latest merger, and what's next?"
Joe brought them up to speed on developments, pausing every now and again to dredge up the finer details, slipping up for a moment when he couldn't recall the name of one of the companies they'd just closed the deal with. Karen corrected him, scratching at her neck with one pink talon.
"Well, Joe," Andy said at last, "it's been a good year, a good year. But we're concerned about this latest deal. The rumour mill has been whirring, and as you know, we tend to feel there's often no smoke without fire."
Joe wondered what the rumours were, starting to feel sweat prickle on his hairline.
"We thought Matt's formal warning might help streamline things, but we've been told it's not been completely smooth sailing since. You've spent a bit of time away from the office in the last few weeks, and your team have had to really roll up their sleeves to keep things on track. Some of them tell us you've been visiting clients a lot."
Andy paused and lifted an eyebrow.
"Yet your diary seems strangely empty, and you've not mentioned any new clients."
Joe found himself leaping to his own defence, used to having to fight for survival in this industry. There was always someone snapping just behind you, desperate to take your place.
"I've been directing operations, updating the team all the time, and we've discussed the importance of delegation before. I need my team to all be aware of the whole process from start to finish, and they have been more than capable of running things, as was evidenced when we pulled the deal off."
He wondered which of them had slunk up here to the bosses to whisper in their ear about his absences. He thought of their faces waiting downstairs. He didn't blame them. He'd have done the same himself a few months ago.
"So this working remotely, that will all be coming to an end, will it not?"
It was not a question. Andy stood staring down at Joe, using his not unimpressive height to intimidate. An old trick. He placed his hands behind his back, an expectant look on his face, a man not used to waiting.
"We wouldn't want to lose you," he said, giving his bark of a laugh.
Joe noticed the warning in his sentence. He found himself nodding automatically, watching as if from afar as his life picked up pace, as if he were getting on a roller coaster and the bar was coming down over him. No more thoughts of heading back to Suffolk. No more dreams of taking his foot off the pedal. This wasn't a job you could do out of town. You had to protect it, be available 24 hours a day. The thought used to get him leaping out of bed in the morning, proud to be chauffeured to one of the finest buildings in London, complaining in a loud voice about the 18-hour days, the overnight stays, the takeaway food, the client meetings that ended up in Mayfair nightclubs. Suddenly he felt weary thinking about it all. Knowing he'd need to find that energy again, that spark. He was dismissed soon afterwards, Karen staying behind so she and Andy could discuss him. They watched him in silence as he left the room, their heads cocked to one side. He wondered what they were thinking, whether they could sense the shift in him. He got through the day on automatic, answering emails, checking figures, laughing with colleagues. A split second late, perhaps, responses sometimes dredged up from where his mind had wandered off to. It was dark when he left the building, the pavement slick with rainwater, a damp smell lingering in the air. He rested his head back on the car seat and tried to will away the headache that had emerged at lunchtime. He paused outside his block, feeling as if everything had changed since he last stepped through the doors. Then, taking a breath, he headed up in the lift, feeling his heart sink at the thought that he would step out into an empty flat. He stood for a moment as the lift doors froze on either side of him, the whole place in darkness, the chill whistling through the place. Then he turned on his new lamps with a decisive push, moving across from the living room to the kitchen, every surface polished, the place spotless, his belongings tidied away. He searched for a box of matches in every drawer, unable to light the many candles he'd bought. He moved back to the living room, his leather sofa too stiff to get comfortable. He switched on the television, flicked through the channels, not settling on anything, watching programs zip past, faces come and go, music burst, and then silence. He couldn't settle. Got up to stare at the bathroom. He had had the bath taken out when he'd first moved in, replaced it with a double shower. A bath had seemed pointless. There was no time to lounge about. The room couldn't be more different from his mum's small bathroom. The walls lined with black onyx, the chrome-heated towel rail sparkling, the mirror surrounded by spotlights, the underfloor heating just coming through. It was worth about 10 times as much for a start. So why did he miss the freestanding bath, the window that looked out on the fields behind the village, the bottles and tubs on the side that made the water smell so good, the loo you needed to flush twice in quick succession to make it work? He moved back through the living space, not sure what he was doing, ending up in his bedroom. He pulled out a brand new pair of pajamas from their box and changed into them, feeling instantly more relaxed. Normally he went to bed in just his pants, sometimes even fell asleep on top of the duvet fully clothed. He sat up in bed and stared ahead, thinking about the day, the past few weeks' happenings zipping around each other, muddled. He reached out a hand for the emergency pack of pills he kept in the bedside table, popping two into his hand, staring at them for the longest time. He shifted under the duvet, realizing what felt wrong. No hot water bottle. Clara would often leave him one out to take to bed. His feet felt chilly, the bed enormous. He wondered for the 10th time that day whether she had left the village. He'd got an email from his mum earlier. She was going to sell the shop. Roz had made a decent offer and she didn't have the energy to run it by herself. He was relieved she seemed to know what she wanted, had seen the way her face had lit up when Gavin had appeared. Still, he hadn't been able to stop himself scanning the high street as he'd left that morning, looking out for a curtain of shiny blonde hair, a purple hat and a chunky knit jumper. She hadn't been there, though, and he cursed himself again for letting her walk into the night. Now he was back in London, where Clara had once lived and worked. He wondered whether they had ever walked past each other in Canary Wharf, attended the same conferences, talks. He couldn't imagine her in that world, in a sharp suit and spiked heels. It seemed all wrong. Would she stay in the village? Had she already moved on? Oh, he needed to sleep, to get his head in gear. Taking one last look at the two pills in his hand, he swallowed them both in one mouthful. Chapter 33. Clara knew she should feel more grateful. Gavin and Louisa had taken her out for a wonderful farewell dinner the night before and had been working on a surprise when they got back and all through this morning. She'd heard rustling and giggling from the corridor and had a sneaking suspicion it involved Gavin's spare room. Louisa couldn't do anything quietly, knocking glasses over with her wildly flailing hands every time she told a story. Clara already adored her. She'd felt lonely, though, staring at them both across the table, their easy joking, Gavin placing a hand over Louise's, his face constantly breaking into a smile, his eyes creasing when she spoke. Clara was happy for them, but their togetherness had seemed to accentuate her own single status. She'd never minded life without a boyfriend before, had always chosen to be on her own, free to do her own thing, rather than remain in a half-hearted partnership. Now, though, she felt the tug. Had glimpsed a future in a moment of pure happiness on the rooftop of the flat under the stars. She kept returning to that night, the dip of his head, how right it had felt. Then she thought back to when she had felt something shift, remembering how he'd emerged from the bathroom, utterly at ease with himself, a broad grin on his face, and then the wild-eyed panic as he realized that his face was covered with mud. She grinned at the ceiling. Then, with a pang, remembered that that was all over now. She wasn't back in the flat with Joe in the room next door, trying his damnedest to be Hooger. He had left, and she was back where she'd begun, in the single room under the eaves in the pub. A knock on the door roused her.
30 minutes, and we'll see you at the shop, Louisa trilled. In this, please.
A pink satin blindfold appeared under the door, and Clara couldn't help smiling at it.
I'll be there, she called back.
She needed to get a grip, put on a big smile, shake off the mood. They'd been so generous, Louisa offering to pay her for her time in the shop, Clara adamantly refusing the money, but touched by the gesture. It was never about that, she insisted. It became home. She'd bitten her lip after the words had left her, realizing as she'd said them that it was exactly how she felt. Quietly allowing Louisa to give her the largest slice of tiramisu instead of money, the pudding sticking in her throat as she swallowed each mouthful. She dragged herself to the bathroom, staring at her face in the mirror and reaching for her makeup bag. Bronzer, mascara, lip salve. She felt better with each stroke, emerging into the bedroom a glossier, shinier, more together version of herself. Pulling on one of her favourite dresses, she looked at herself in the thin strip of mirror on the back of the door. The dark green material brought out the blondes in her hair. She smacked her lips together, reached for her coat and scooped up the blindfold, ready to head into the high street, determined to enjoy her send-off.
She's here! That's her! There!
The whispers hit her as she approached, amazed to see such a swell of people outside the shop. The little boy whom Joe had drawn a duck for gave her an energetic wave. Gavin was handing out drinks on a tray. She could make out mugs topped with marshmallows, which he almost dropped on seeing her.
"Blindfold, Clara! Now!" he called.
She hastily obliged, pulling it over her eyes, feeling more than a little silly as the world was plunged into darkness, and she inched her way along the pavement, waving both arms in front of her so she didn't bump into anyone in the crowd. With relief, she felt an arm looped through hers and smelt basil as she was steered down the pavement by Louisa.
Take it slowly. I am so excited.
Oh, watch out for that child. That was a close one.
Louisa,
Clara protested, feeling people squeezing past her, the brush as she knocked against someone.
Oh, don't worry, it's only Roz. It would be a desperate shame for her to spill her drink down that camel coat of hers. Chocolate is notoriously difficult to get out. Oops, I think she heard.
Hi, Roz.
Clara found herself giggling quietly.
Is the blindfold quite necessary? She asked.
Louisa ignored her, of course, keeping up her spiel.
Oh, there are children everywhere. It's such heaven. And they're all delighted by Lady Carcar.
Gavin carried her cage down from the flat, but she does keep calling them all shitheads, so he's thinking of taking her back upstairs.
So thoughtful, she breathed, pausing to sigh like a lovesick teen.
He can't bear the thought of missing your reaction. Such a big heart. Clara had started giggling again as they came to a halt. She could hear Lady Carcar screeching,
"Show me the money!"
"Go on, then," Louisa nudged her.
This is it.
Take a peek. Slowly, Clara removed the blindfold. She was standing in front of the shop, surrounded by the crowd, and she gasped as she took it all in.